welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is someone who's going to be playing really mellow piano music during this entire recording. It's Anande Buetis. Just over the whole thing. Just beautiful Philip Glass music during this entire recording.
I love that. Give me like a simple piano arrangement with this beautiful, simple melody. I'm in. I'm here for it. Love it.
So there's a show on Amazon Prime that I watched this year called Tales from the Loop. It's a very mellow, thoughtful, neat show, which I love the cinematography. I love the lighting, but I also really dug the score. And during the research of this for Candyman 1992, I looked up Philip Glass, and I realized that he helped out on the score for The Truman Show, which he did the Truman Sleeps piece, which is beautiful. And then he also did the Tales from the Loop soundtrack. And I love that soundtrack. So I just got real excited. I yelled up to my wife, Megan. I'm like, Megan, Philip Glass did Tales from the Loop. And she's like, cool.
That's nice, honey.
Yeah, but that's how nerdy I got into this research here for Candyman. And I'm so glad that this is going to be random, but I'm so glad that you recommended doing Candyman 1992, because I started looking up the people who did all the special effects on this movie, the special effects makeup, the prosthetics. And you have some insane people. So you have Marc Coulier. He won 2 Oscars for Iron Lady and Grand Budapest Hotel. But what I realized was between Leonard Pollack and Bob and Dave Keane, Gary Tunnicliffe, and Marc Coulier, they all basically got their start on Waxwork. And then they worked on either Nightbreed or those early kind of Clive Barker films. So they, in 88, they all worked together. And then they went on their own. I know the Keens and Coulier worked on Event Horizon. They did the hell scenes, the really gnarly visions of hell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I love it that, like, they got their start there. And what, like, that Marc Coulier, he worked on Nightbreed, Event Horizon, AVP, Sunshine, and then he did Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I knew you'd like that, because, I don't know, that's a fun movie. It's a good zombie pick film. And then...
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Yeah, that was excellent.
Oh, I love that movie. But what made me most happy was this Gary Tunnicliffe, who did the blood in this movie, he worked on Gone Girl. He was the blood guy in Gone Girl when she gets covered in blood.
I mean, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
That was done pretty well.
She wiped out MPH, and that was him. And if you watch Candyman, the blood in this movie is exceptional. I mean,
it's something. Just the splattering in general, like on the walls and stuff. I mean, like a lot of times the sets are pretty much covered in it, but if you look closer, you'll see it's splattering, almost like paint, like splattered against the walls. It's amazing.
It's so deep red too, and gooey and thick and like coagulated in certain moments.
Ugh. It's like the first time when Helen wakes up in that pool of blood in Anne-Marie's apartment. Like that, just that pool of blood. Ugh.
It's good blood work in this movie. And when Trevor at the end, when he's all, it's a different color than the other blood because it's more recent. It's insane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I actually love all the red. So I got excited. I shouldn't have done this, but I messaged you on Twitter while I was watching this movie. And you probably shouldn't do that. You should probably save it for the podcast. But I love how she wears red. Her car's red. Then you have the deep blood red. But then the rest of the colors are kind of muted. Like every light in this movie looks like it's on a dimmer and it's very warm. And the oranges aren't bright orange. They're more of like a toasted orange. The colors in this... I like how the you get the deep red, the bright red, but then everything else is muted, and the light is muted as well. It's warm, and I think that gives it such a neat vibe. This movie, it's really good, Candyman. It's not just a horror movie. I think it's a good film in general.
Absolutely. Like, you know, the first time they're at Cabrini Green, and the first time they enter Anne-Marie's apartment, and it immediately strikes you, like, even before we step into the apartment, the door opens, and we already see, like, you know, a part of the apartment, and you can see that soft pinks of the wall. So on the outside, you've got, like, these, like, dark, muted, like, reddish, brownish colors with green and stuff, but like you say, pretty much muted. And then this light pink that immediately hits you. And then, you know, in the end where Helen goes back home after she escaped the hospital where she was, and she walks in and, yeah, the the lover is painting a apartment this bright pink. So that's also pretty nice, you know, like Anne-Marie's apartment with the soft pinks and stuff, showing like how she's, you know, like also just a person living there, trying to make do, trying to look after a child. Even though like from the outside, you can judge and say like, it looks freaking terrible and these people don't care and whatever. Versus then at the end, that old thing where the girlfriend thinks this is the color that you use to make a home, but it's this bright pink and it looks like Helen wants to die from freaking, why is my apartment this bright Barbie doll pink?
Yeah.
I love that, where she walks in and she's just like, you can just see her whole demeanor is like, oh no, what am I looking at?
Man, Trevor, too, he gets sick of her quick too, that poor lady. His new girlfriend. By the end, he's just sitting in the bathroom, like, oh man, I'm already over Stacey. It's interesting.
Trevor is the worst, Mark. Trevor, like every time I watch, I can't decide. Honestly, we should do a poll when we air this episode. Like, who's the worst, Trevor or Professor Pascal? Honestly, who's the worst man in this movie?
Just speaking, you feel so bad for Helen Lyle in this, played by Virginia Madsen. Also, I think Bernard Rose kind of loved, this is weird, but sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, this director really likes this actor, this actress's face. But the way he lights her, and I know that was purposefully, like with her eyes being lit in certain moments and the hypnotizing, but just the light on her hair, the way it glows a little bit, the way he frames her in a lot of shots with almost like really sort of like angelic soft lighting. But then watching all the crap she goes through with her husband, talking about urban legends before she can release her paper and messing with the undergrads. And then this guy mansplaining something she's researching. It's a really interesting mix, though, how Bernard Rose lights her and frames her, but then the way people treat her in the story. It's a really neat kind of split, I guess, between that. And I don't know if you noticed
that. Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think because, you know, as much as there's like, there's a very strong like racism theme in Candyman, but there's also a very strong theme of women and how, you know, women in peril is used to demonize the black man type of thing. And, but the focus is like very much on her, like how she also gets treated and like almost no one takes her seriously because this is all power play thing going on in the film all the time, where it's kind of like, it feels like they're suggesting you have to put the fear of God in people for them to respect you, you know, because that's kind of like Candyman's thing. And that's kind of what happens with Helen, you know, like Trevor only takes her seriously when she supposedly starts going berserk, you know. It's all power thing. So yeah, watching like the men, but I love that restaurant scene where, even though I want to punch Pascal, Professor Pascal, in the face when he's like, I wrote about him 10 years ago. Like, I hate that. Like, don't you just want to... Anyway, and then he goes into this whole, so, the legend of Candyman, with his freaking drawl accent. Look, he does it, the actor does it really, really well. What's his name again?
The actor, let me, I have...
I've got him here somewhere. Michael Culkin.
Philip Purcell.
I don't really know much about him, but I thought he did like the insufferable mansplaining professor pretty well. You know, he's telling this story, and that shot that Bernard Rose does it's almost like Hitchcockian also, but like this romantic goth with like the lights only covering like it's a mask over her face. I get so excited. I like lose my words.
A lot is asked of Virginia Madsen in this. She has to react to that story. And to be fair, she just has a camera in her face and maybe Culkin's reading off screen, but just the way she reacts to it, this like the way she absorbs it with almost like empathy, and she's into it, learning it.
Yeah, definitely empathy, because like that's what I love about the scene, which is what I tried to get to, is like he's like being all academic about it and let me tell you about the history, and also kind of embellishing it because he's just loving being able to everyone shut up and listen to my story kind of vibe. But then like her reaction to it, and like how she goes in this entrancement with the the fear, but also the fascination. And then you can see just the sadness in her eyes of what in the hell? This is the saddest story. How can people be so terrible? Mm-hmm. Like, it's so that bit of acting with her, like, she's very good in this movie. She's got moments where it's like, girl, no wonder she won a lot of critic awards and stuff for this one. Like, and you can see why. She was really good at it.
Her computer acting and her microfish screen acting.
It's, you messaged me about that as well.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with computer acting in movies because...
Oh, really?
It's not easy. You're staring at a blue screen, green screen, but just the way that they shot her is just her... I don't know, there's like a sense of wonder as she's researching on the computer, typing in. I've never seen computer acting like hers before. It's not...
It's a lot of... What, yeah, it's a lot of close-ups in the film of her. A lot of close-ups. I mean, yeah. Up and close and personal.
Bernard Lowe, he likes shooting her face. And that sounds weird, but you can tell. Like, I was watching Frances Ha, right? And Greta Gerwig is in that movie, and Alexander Payne directed? No, Noah Baumbach directed that, Frances Ha. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, like, I feel like this dude is really into Greta. Like, I don't know. I'm not trying to be reductive or anything. And they do this with, like, both people. But the way that he shot, Noah Baumbach shot Greta Gerwig, I'm like, man, he likes her. And then a year or two later, they're together. Like, I don't know if that works every time or if you've noticed that, but sometimes you're like, geez Louise, this is going there. But she holds it really well. And I think about her or either Sandra Bullock, and Sandra Bullock's a fine actress, but I liked her sense of wonder in this. And I liked that she was a different character too. She really goes against the typical, this movie actually goes against most of the horror vibes that you can think of. You have the romantic villain who's, you know, he's trying to...
Exactly. An anti-hero.
Yeah, in Demon Knight, you have Billy Zane trying to... This is a weird example, but you have Billy Zane as an evil entity trying to seduce people to his side. And then this one, he's trying to seduce Helen. And I think that's a really interesting vibe. He's not just trying to kill her. Then you have her where she... She gets a black eye, but she goes back and she's not afraid. She seems industrious. It's a really interesting take. And she loved it too, because she's like, normally, like, the traditional role was always helpless victims, but now Alien and Halloween, she's like, where women get chased but still remain strong. So she's like, Helen never allows herself to be a victim in Candyman. Horrible things happen to her, but she fights back. And that's really rare nowadays. I don't know. It's cool. It's a good movie.
Is. I mean, there's a reason it's got a cult following and it's getting a remake and everything, because there's a lot of stuff. And I think a lot of people are like, yeah, but the movie still could have pushed it. And like, there's, you know, stuff wrong with it. But I mean, this was 1992. Yeah. Have you seen the horror movies from 1992?
Like, I actually have that list pulled up.
1992. Yeah, there we go. For 1992, this was really good. I mean... You know, I've seen, this is not my idea, I've seen people say it before, but there's also a lot of similarities that you can draw between Candyman and Get Out, for instance, you know, a lot of stuff. So if you think then, you know, or remember then that this was back in 1992, like it was different stuff that we were being shown. Like, I love the fact that Candyman was, you know, like not, like I read somewhere, I don't know if it was Bernard Rose or Tony Todd that said he had more to do, he was a tragic hero, so he had more to in common with Dracula than with Freddy Krueger, for instance, you know?
Ooh.
Having like the black man and his like, you know, like sufferings and like his whole, the mythology that happened, but because of how he was treated in life, and then the white woman and her same stuff, even though like it's different classes, but then making these classes clash within the movie. Man, like I remember when I watched it, I was like I think I was, 10, 11, like I was young.
Yeah.
But I was like, what did I just watch? And it stuck with me. Like, it was so good. I wanted to watch it again because I couldn't understand anything because I was still like, not anything. I couldn't understand all of the things because I was young, but it had such an impression because, you know, having watched all the other horror movies and stuff, it was so different. It was just, but it also resonated because you felt with both Helen and Candyman, you know? And I think that's what just made it so great.
And it's still relevant today. So I was at a grocery store. And so a lot of people are talking about drive-in theaters now. And there's a drive-in theater I used to love going to, but it's too far now. It's like probably a 50-minute drive, and that's just way too much to go to the movies. And then if you do a doubleheader and driving back, I'm old. I don't do that anymore. But
yeah, but it's too far.
When I was talking to somebody about it, I was like, yeah, it's just too far of a drive. And then the guy's like, yeah, and it's in a bad area of town too. And I kind of just thought, like, that's kind of like another. I mean, there are bad areas of town, but I do think there are areas that aren't bad. But it's sort of this myth that people have created, like, oh, it's just bad down there. Well, have you been down there? No. I'm not. You know, there are in Cabrini Green, that was a bad area. It was loaded with gangs and everything like that. But like, it's just a myth, I think, that people create of just this myth of that's a bad area. Does that make sense? Like, don't go down there. It's bad. And then you're there, and you're like, this is fine.
Absolutely. Like, I think, I mean, it's one of those things that just keeps on happening, and it creates this divide. Of course, there are certain areas where crime is, you know, probably like higher and whatever. But, you know, for me, like, I live in South Africa. I was born like pretty much into the swan song of apartheid, you know. And growing up, like, a lot of like adults were telling you to fear the black man, fear like the black areas. Like, we had a township, so now I know you guys, yeah, township isn't the same in America as it's here. Our townships were literally created to segregate black people from, well, any other like non-white folk. So the townships were always also on the edges of the cities, you know. The town I grew up in, we had a township adjacent to us, and I remember like growing up, and there was like, we were told that between our town and the township, they dug, I think if you convert it, it's like something like 7.5 feet, they dug this trench, this long line trench between our town and them to keep black people away. That's what we were told. So when I got older, I was like, was that actually why the trench was built? Were they maybe like putting in water stuff? Like, I was actually not sure. I was like, is this an urban legend?
Yeah.
when we said we're going to do Candyman and I started researching, I remembered that. And I was like, man, let me see if I can find anything about this bloody racist trench. Because Mark, you know, we drove to school every freaking day, like the road parallel to this supposed trench. And I hated it. I couldn't understand this fucking trench. I couldn't understand this fear because I didn't have this fear. Like growing up, you know, people telling you to fear the black man. Oh, like apartheid is ending. They're going to take over. Fear, fear, fear. Like, you know, we've got a lot of, obviously, like a lot of racists in South Africa. And I just never could understand it because I didn't share the fear in the first place. And I never could understand how people can be so bloody disrespectful. Anyway, so I started researching, and for the life of me, I can't find anything about this change. So now it could also be like the fact that we don't have a lot of like old archival stuff digitalized yet. But like, I'm going to make it my mission now to find out, was this an urban legend? Was it like a change was, you know, dug for something else, and then white people made up this story of, yeah, it's because the black man wants to come into our neighborhoods and like kill us or whatever? Or was that actually what happened?
And that's
urban legends.
That's like Candyman too. He's saying she got that killer arrested, the guy that came in and what called her a bitch and beat her up in the bathroom.
Right.
Dirtiest bathroom I've ever seen, by the way.
Oof. Oh, dude. Oof. Like, you can so feel the disgust, like, you're disgusted with her. It's so gross. Ooh, you can almost smell it. Ah.
Yeah, whenever I think about that thing, I get some shivers thinking about that.
Yeah.
But, so, he gets caught.
Best dirty bathrooms.
Oh, yeah,
bathrooms.
We should do that. We should do a poll there for the site.
Yeah.
And, wait, this is random. The Jane Ann Stewart, she's a production designer. She became Alexander Payne's person. So, she did Sideways About Schmidt. Election, Citizen Ruth. And when you think about those movies, maybe about Schmidt, Election, Citizen Ruth, they really do capture a neat blue collar aesthetic. And I think that movie does a good job here of capturing that aesthetic as well. So this production designer, she knows her stuff. But yeah, so that guy got arrested, the myth is gone, so he has to commit another murder. So it's just people keeping this myth alive to keep people scared. And that happens everywhere in the world. So it's just another way you watch it and you're like, geez Louise, this movie. I mean, it was a shrewd move of Bernard Rose to work with. He actually worked really close with Clive Barker, too, which makes me happy. to switch the story, because in the original it's just a woman investigating graffiti, and then she becomes the victim of Candyman. So I think it was smart moving it to Chicago. And Ebert in his review noted that it's a smart move. I'm like, dig it.
And absolutely. And also Candyman is white in the English story, because Clive Barker's, in Liverpool, I think. The Candyman is like, because he's got it says something about pale yellow waxy skin or something like that. Like, it doesn't say he's a black man or anything. It's more like a class thing where Bernard Rose decided, let's put it in Chicago and then do the race thing, because why not? It's there.
I love it. And I love the architecture,
it's brave.
Too. The very, I love the architecture of it. And, he lied to the production company. He had never written the script before. And then when they realized, they were pissed, but then they loved the script. I love it. And then he came from the same place where Michael Bay and Nolan came from. They came from directing music videos to moving on to these. I'm telling you, if you can direct music videos, you can direct anything. Because I've worked on a bunch of those and they're terrible.
Yeah, so, it's propaganda films. Like, that's the company, right? Propaganda films is the company where they all were. Yeah, propaganda films. Because I remember, when I saw the logo also, I was like, oh, man, you remember this logo? And then I was like, David Fincher was part of starting the company, and they did some pretty cool things. I know, they did some things with PolyGram Films, everyone working together. Wild at Heart, they did the Twin Peaks series, being John Malkovich, adaptation. Yeah, they did some pretty cool stuff.
Ooh, those are some good pictures
and
right
also,
there.
Here's the thing, though, right? Because Virginia Madsen, coming back to, how you were Rose really likes her. Virginia Madsen was actually friends with Rose and his wife. They all knew each other. And she was actually up for, Bernadette. But then they decided, no, they want to make Bernadette African-American. And that's how Virginia eventually got the part of Helen. Because they were also at one point thinking of getting Sandra Bullock to do Helen and Eddie Murphy to do Candyman. Can you imagine that? Candyman with Eddie Murphy and Sandra Bullock.
Tony Todd. I love Eddie Murphy. I think he should have been nominated for Dolemite and Bowfinger and should have won for Dreamgirls. Yeah. Amazing actor. But just Tony Todd's voice and his height and just the way he read the character. I can't see anybody else. I really can't.
His intensity is just, I've told you this, but I would love Tony Todd in every movie, really. Just give him a cameo and everything. He actually said, I read somewhere, who's the director that did the second one? Bill Gordon?
Condon.
He also, did, I think, Dreamgirls, but he also did Twilight. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Tony Todd phoned him up and he was like, dude, don't you want to give me a cameo in Twilight? And he never heard anything back. So Tony Todd just said, he's probably too much of a softie to play a vampire. Which I thought was a funny thing to say, because I could totally see him as a vampire. Oh, it's softie.
Throw him in there.
He's just a big softie.
I love him in that movie. That'd be great. Yeah. Oh man, but
he does have a little vampire moment actually when he kills the doctor in the psych ward or whatever, and then he just flies out of the window backwards. It's a little vampire moment.
That's the one scene that throws me out of the movie a little bit. I don't know if you see that and you're like, what? Because the tone is just so contemplative, right? It's so. Not mellow, almost there's sadness permeates it. I don't know what it is. It's very, just the warm lighting, but then that happens, you're like, wait, what? That's
exactly. I think it's a little bit of a callback to Dracula, but then at the same time, I think if he wanted to do that little thing, it should have been somewhere else, not that moment where Helen is like, fine, doctor, I'll prove it to you. And then the doctor dies in front of him, and then whoops.
There's no coming back from that when she gets that doctor killed. Oof.
I always laugh at that scene, and I always laugh when she and Bernadette goes to Cabrini Green the first time, and she climbs through the hole in the wall. Bernadette is sitting on the bathtub waiting for her, and then all of a sudden Helen just pops up, Bernadette. And then she's immediately like, oh, sorry, did I scare you? I'm like, bitch, you were just like, Bernadette.
That'd be better if she was laughing when she did that.
Oh.
I mean, you need these jump scares to keep people awake, right?
Absolutely. It does mess with the tone a bit because you're entranced with her, with all the stuff that she's seeing and everything. And then it's like this almost comical moment that like it takes you out a bit, but I guess also needed. Maybe it would have been too much back in 1992 to not have those moments.
I mean, I guess I was, as much as my research I found, I never read anything about those jump scares when they did it. Maybe it was just a note, like keep audiences awake. But I don't know. Like,
maybe.
92, I just want to say this real quick. 92 is when Bram Stoker's Dracula came in. And that's one of my like all-time favorite, like one of the best-looking horror films I've ever seen. And I love how they were like, Francis, you are not going on location to shoot this. You're shooting this in studios. And Francis is like, okay. So now we can control you in the studios. And then it went months over and millions over budget. This guy just goes wild in studio and out and on location, but it's a beautiful looking movie. And then,
It's pretty cool.
So I was 10 years old in this year. And this is when horror really took hold with me because 91, I remember seeing Ernest Scared Stupid and some slasher movies when I was 9. But then when I turned 10, I watched Dracula, or maybe 11 when they came out on VHS. But Dracula, then you had Army of Darkness, Alien 3, Buffy. I remember I tore through a Hellraiser 3. I was obsessed with Dr. Giggles when I saw it on VHS. I had to rent it. That's kind of when I started becoming into horror. So maybe that's why I keep coming back to Candyman, because that's when I really started getting into horror movies.
Yeah, I get that, because I think Candyman was the second horror movie that I watched. It was like one of the first horror movies that it was the one that stuck with me. Like, I don't think it was the first horror movie that I ever watched, but it was the first one that really stuck with me and that made me, you know, like come back to it. I wasn't big on horror at first, but I think it was just because my mom didn't like horrors. She was scared of it and she was like, no, you guys can't watch it and whatever. So I had to watch horror at my friends' houses and stuff, you know? So I think, that's probably just why. But I always came back to like Candyman and I don't know, like growing up, I didn't really like a lot of horror, really.
And you know what I think I liked about Candyman? When you're 10, you don't understand all the cultural context.
Yeah.
But you know, you've heard Candyman, you've heard Bloody Mary. So you have this boogeyman created that in some pretty gnarly kills. And so you kind of at least have, I guess there's enough there for a 10-year-old to like, but then there's enough there for Roger Ebert to like, who hated horror movies, to get. Oh, I dig it. I keep saying I dig this movie, but I don't care. I have a quick question for you. Let's say Bloody Mary's real, right? In this world. Everyone in the world knows that Bloody Mary exists. And you're at a bar, and it's dark, and it's loud, and you are trying to order a Bloody Mary, and you're at the bar, but at the bar, you're looking, there's a mirror in front of you, because a lot of bars have mirrors, and the bartender can't hear you, so you're just yelling it to this person. Mm-hmm. Will you get killed by Bloody Mary? Or does Bloody Mary know that you're ordering a drink, not a ghost spirit?
Yeah, no, I think the intention might do something. I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Mark. Do you believe in Bloody Mary and Candyman?
I don't know. I'd never do it.
Have you said Candyman's name in the mirror 5 times? Have you?
I've never messed around with any of that stuff.
Oh, really?
For me, I don't want to stick my hand into like a dog's jaw. I don't want to like stick my head into a gator's jaw. I just stay away from things that will. There's risk taking, and then there's just that kind. I stay away from all of it. I'm not chancing it. I'm not doing it.
No, honestly, I didn't do it at first, but then obviously you're hanging out with some of your girlfriends, you have a sleep overnight, someone's like, hey, let's take Candyman, you know, like being all stupid, girls, whatever. And it was, it's more just like, you know, spooky stuff and kind of harmless fun with the kids and whatever. But I mean, so here's a cool urban legend from South Africa that we grew up. Because I think, that's the thing. Those didn't really scare me. The one that scared me was Pinky Pinky. So Pinky Pinky is this Tokolosh. a tokolosh in Africa is like a half man, half creature type of like demon thing. So Pinky Pinky is like, it takes its story from the tokolosh. It's like a tokolosh type. And Pinky Pinky comes for girls in the bathrooms.
Ooh.
And yeah, when you're, yeah, especially when you're on the loo. Then there was another version of Pinky Pinky tickling babies. And then the babies laugh so much until they die.
What?
So, I mean, obviously, yeah, you can guess like the fears something like this is rooted in with like girls in the bathroom and babies and whatever. That freaked the shit out of us. Like Pinky Pinky was not cool. And that was also a thing about you don't say his name in the bathroom. You like, you know, that one was more a thing for us than Candyman, saying Candyman in the window. Oh, like, and Bloody Mary, because Bloody Mary is not, it's not really like, not a lot of people knew about Bloody Mary in South Africa. It's not a big thing here. Okay. So
if you had a bar trying to order a drink and you have to yell it multiple times, you're safe.
Yeah, we've probably done that a lot without even knowing. So I'm going to say you'll be safe. What do you think?
I think Bloody Mary is a jerk and we'll get you later. We'll remember.
You're scared of Bloody Mary. What is the exact story about Bloody Mary?
There's a lady named Mary, and then she killed a bunch of people, got bloody, got cursed, and then gets people back. How's that sound?
Ah, there you go. Simple.
You know what freaked me out was the troll from Ernest Scared Stupid. And I've written about that for Cracked, too, because... So this troll, right? You have Camp Crystal Lake. Jason's at the camp, or it's his mom. They want revenge on teenage campers. Nightmare on Elm Street wanted revenge on the Elm Street kids. That wasn't me. Then you have, Michael Myers killing teenagers. When I was young, 9 years old, I watched Ernest Scared Stupid. And that troll specifically targeted children. And it had no pattern. Like, it would hide under your bed. When you looked under the bed, it would jump up on the bed and get you. It would use voice modification to get you. It would go into public. It would, mass crowds wouldn't stop it from grabbing you. So when I was a feral kid riding around on a bike when I was 9 years old in the woods of Florida, I was just a wreck. I was really worried at all moments of my life after watching that movie for several months. Just imagine me in a dark room drinking a cheap blended scotch, smoking a cigarette. But, right, there's no rules to it, is what I'm saying.
Very Dr. Sleep.
Yeah, there's no rules. It's just going to, it doesn't care. If it misses, so let's say it's chasing you and you're faster than me, it'll just turn and run and grab me. Like, there's no, I have my mind set on this person because they're the relatives of yada yada. It's just, you didn't have to say its name. You're just a kid getting attacked by the thing. So that always really scared me.
Yeah, I think those movies are like when there aren't like these specific rules. I think that is always the scariest. Like yesterday I saw that article The Witch, the movie of the witches. Like,
oh, yeah,
30
yeah.
Years, 30 years thing. Mm-hmm. And like how that's the scariest movie. Kids movie ever. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Cause that's also one of those where, it doesn't matter. You're a kid. So they want to like turn you into a mice. It doesn't matter. Like it doesn't, all kids, absolutely all kids. So as a kid, like I had nightmares of like adults trying to turn me into a mouse and then wanting to eat me. Like I had nightmares about that. Cause again, like it's like you say, there are no rules. It's just because you're a kid. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about the fact that you're a kid.
And that witch, too, the scariest one to me is... So I know I keep bringing this up, but I actually included that in the same article with Trantor, these witches. And I wrote about the scariest characters in PG movies after 1986, when PG and PG-13 and R was established. And there's a witch in that movie where there's a kid in a tree, and she's like, hey, come to me. Come here. I have a snake for you. Like, this lady... That's scary to me. You have this woman, you're in a tree and she comes up to you and she offers you a snake. She obviously has no idea what kids like. She just wants to murder you. That was the scariest part to me.
Obviously.
Seeing that. Like not in the restaurant being chased around. I mean, that's still scary because it gets butchered with a knife, one of those little mice. But it just, I don't know, watching this, a normal looking lady attempt to woo a kid with a snake.
Ugh. So creepy. Yeah, no, that one freaked me out too. But I have a legit fear and heavy fear of snakes. So I was like, wow, does that ever work? but it's so creepy.
So oblivious. All right, so how about this? I'm freaked out right now. So let's take a quick break. I'm going to reset.
Yeah, because we're trailing off. It's now the witches.
Yeah. Hey, that's the MFF pod. We digressed. But yeah, so we'll come back and then we'll talk more Candyman.
We'll
be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And how about those bees? Those are real bees. That's why this movie looks so good. They put real bees from a real bee wrangler, Norman Gary. He worked on Deadly Bees, My Girl, Fried Green Tomatoes. And they just put these bees in his mouth with this special cap that would roll out. And they bit his chest. But that's crazy. Like, that's why this movie looks so good. There's authenticity and real bees in people's mouths.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's... Look, I'm not like that scared of bees, but I also know that, yikes, don't want to get stung. It hurts. So like, again, being a child and watching all the bees, woo, very, very creepy. And like, I read actually that Virginia Madsen is actually allergic to bees as well. So yeah, it was very important to have like, bees that didn't sting, didn't fly, and like she just had to be really, really still. But yeah, I mean, kudos for Tony Todd. But yeah, he negotiated a bonus of like $1,000 for every sting that he got, and yeah, he got what stung 23 times. So like that was some good money. I think I'll do that if you pay me, you know, like $23,000. I'll put some bees in my mouth.
I've been surrounded by bees.
I'm a slut for cash.
Yeah,
I'm a freelance writer. I'll do bees in my mouth.
And then I'll write about it.
That was really good, though.
On a shoot. I was working in the Everglades, and I got surrounded by bees. And I had to stand in one spot and not move for a long time while bees swarmed around me. And then all the while on the walkie-talkie, people are yelling at me to bring stuff in. And I didn't want to move. So eventually they ran out all hot and angry, one of the producers, and they saw the situation. Like, oh, okay, you're cool. Didn't help me. They just let me.
Sorry.
They just left me there to be surrounded by bees. Ugh.
How long did you stand there?
Oh, I mean, I was probably there for like 15 minutes until they just, I don't know why, but they moved on.
Probably because you started sweating profusely.
Ooh. I was getting ready to run too. Then they kind of, it was scary. That was a weird job for me. I had to carry around a dead gator and snakes.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because it was freshly dead. So if you lay it somewhere, that looks like a real gator for B-roll. And then they had snakes, but they got the wrong snakes. And so there's like poisonous snakes carrying around.
This is a terrible story. No, let's move on.
I got the job because I did a documentary about pythons in the Everglades. So I learned how to catch them and stuff. It was neat. So,
what?
But I guess going back to the bees, I love it too. Like Rose, he wanted traditional effects, not like optical effects, which I dig.
Yeah.
Right? And I love that they did that. And then the big fire at the end, that was from the team who did Backdraft of all things, which I really liked. But yeah, that's why I think when you make these movies, it's good to get actors like Tony Todd and Virginia Madsen who, they had names and they had been around for a while, but they had never, this was their, a really massive break. And so they will put bees in their mouth. But if you get a big name actor nowadays, they're not going to do that. I don't think they'd let you do that. Would they let you do that nowadays?
Yeah. I wonder, because I mean, like, I guess it's not necessary now because like we can just throw money at special effects and whatever. But like, it's weird because you'd think because they did that with Candyman, it like showed how it can be done. I don't know.
Yeah.
Then again, but I mean, the bees, I read that Norman Gary, who handled the bees in Candyman, he also did, it's the same bees in My Girl, the bees in My Girl.
Same
bees. And that was in 1991. So the year before Candyman, he took his bees to the set of My Girl, made us all freaking cry. And then he made us cry again with the bees in Fried Green Tomatoes, also 1991. And then 1992. The Candyman bees, which, yeah, made us cry for other reasons. Because honestly, that was horrific. All the bees coming out of his mouth. Oh! Like, yeah.
He had a bee racket going on.
Like, now it's like, man, that's hardcore. But as a kid, it was like, what am I watching? Mom, I want to
I don't think what people understand is that, maybe they do, of course, but that's a long time. Like, to do that shot with all the bees, that is hours of preparation. right there.
It is. And, you know, like most people know also that, like, apparently Bernard Rose took Virginia, like, for hypnotherapy. Mm-hmm. That's why she goes into this trance state. Like, they did that and practiced that so that she can use it in her acting. Like, you can use a keyword and she kind of goes into this state so that he can have this natural effect, because according to him, he doesn't like all the screaming and yelling in horror movies, which, fair. But then he used the same hypnosis technique with the bees, because she was allergic and, like, freaked out. She was like, okay, you know, like, they decided, okay, let's, you know, put her into a state so she can just relax with all the bees happening. Because, yeah, I mean, that it's not like, okay, quick, guys, it's going to take 5 minutes and then we're out of here. No.
Yeah, this is
what bees don't work like that.
No, do not. They say never work with what, kids and animals, and then you have bees on set. But they, I love those looks of hers, those hypnotized looks. I mean, they sell it. She does look hypnotized in those scenes. And they do a good job setting that up with her computer acting. She seems very, I don't know, when she's in situations, even when that guy is, like, super mansplaining to her, she seems sort of, she gets really immersed in that conversation. And with her research, yeah, she gets immersed in
seduced.
That. So it makes sense, I guess, that seduction's happening, that she gets that look. It's neat how they set that up. I dig it.
Absolutely. You know, if she's in the library and she reads the article about, like, who killed Ruthie Jean, that last shot of her face, she's smiling almost. Like, it's like, you know, because she's buying into the story and she's fascinated. Because I was at first like, why is she smiling? But then I understood it's because she sees the story there. She's like having a little, ooh, I'm going to be a detective moment. And I think that also makes this movie pretty good, because, yeah, she doesn't want to impose on these people as an outsider, as a white person. Like, she tries to, like, respect them, but she also doesn't. Like, she tells Jake, what, are you too scared to show me? She throws that little line, manipulating the poor bloody kid that's scared shitless. And then, like, when all said and done and the serial killer has been caught and Bernadette tells her, we're going to get published. She is on cloud number 9. So it's like, yeah, you say you don't want to exploit these people, but, like, you're kind of gonna now, because you're not going to get published and all the accolades and everyone wants to do interviews with you. And so I like that that all happened. And that's kind of where the movie switched. You know, this is probably just a serial killer to, oh, no, wait. Oh, wow. Here we go. So here's the legend. And I love it that the movie is, like, basically, you know, divided in those two parts. And, I mean, that's the reason why we only get to see Candyman, Tony Todd, like, 44 minutes into the film. Oh, and when he first, like, oh, when he stands there in, like, the parking garage, mm-hmm, and he's just like, Helen. Ah! Goosebumps. So good. And then we have the turn where it's like, oh, okay, you wanna like be part of my story? Well, bitch, I'm gonna make you part of my story now.
Then he does his best alienating her from everyone, I guess. And then but all the stuff that he asks her, it all sounds terrible. So his quotes, right? When he's like, enjoy, what does he say? The pain, I can assure you, will be exquisite. It was just this kind of like, I am the writing on the wall, the whisper in the classroom. Like, so now I must shed innocent blood. Come with me. And you're kind of thinking, no. But he's just like,
yeah.
But, I mean, there's something, too. I mean, she said the name. And so I watched a bunch of videos on this movie. I did way too much research on this. And I think I over-researched myself. But a lot of people have complained that when she says his name, it takes him a while to pop up. Now, in the beginning, that we only hear about that urban legend from a college student. So we see a recreation of what she's telling Virginia Madsen, where Ted Raimi, which I love, he pops up in the movie as some, like, gangster. What is he in that? He seems like a tough guy. I'm not used to seeing Ted Raimi as a tough guy.
I don't know, Billy. Yeah, I mean,
but she
did
says
he
it
have
four
dialogue?
Times. Yeah, because he says it four times, right? And then she says it once and she's killed. But we don't know if that's true or not, because it's just a story from the college student. So I guess his rules work differently with the Candyman, right?
Like, well, I think like the beginning is pretty standard, like urban legend vibes, because yeah, that's like the college students saying this story about, what is it? The black man coming for the women and children, because that's what happens. Billy yeah. doesn't get killed, but the girl and the kid does. So, you know, like it starts off nicely with like that undertone or racism vibes. But I think what happens with Helen, though, is I think she doesn't really know if she believes it or not. She's definitely intrigued. That's why we have these like excessive fascination looks of yeah. her and these close-up shots. But then when the serial killer gets caught and it's all said and done, she's like, okay, cool. So yeah, now I really don't, like, I don't believe in it because case closed. This was the story. It was this guy that just beat me up. And that's when Candyman is like, Helen.
Oh, wow.
I come for you.
Be my victim. That's,
be my victim. Oh, what word. So
that's
good.
That's interesting. Okay, yeah, yeah. So do you think he, do you think if his name would have stayed out there and it wouldn't have been proven to be a serial killer, he would have gone after her? Because he said, you did this, now we have to do this. You're the one that wrecked my myth. So would
yeah,
he...
because she basically got the serial killer. Like, when the killer who mutilated the kid in the bathroom, like, beat her up, they got him for it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So then... Man, that guy's bad news too, wasn't he? Geez Louise.
Yeah, it's funny that they got like a Tony Todd lookalike type guy. Yeah. That was also pretty funny. I mean, interesting. Oh, by the way, you also like you probably read also that you know when Helen and Bernadette the first time they go to Cabrini Green and like the gang members that meet them outside, and then they later like. They start like, who are you? They're checking them out. And then they start yelling, it's the 5-0, it's the police. Yeah. Like, oh God, the lady's coming up the stairs. They're actually like real gang members that they used of Cabrini. Like they were like, let's incorporate these guys, you know, which I thought was kind of cool because like, again, like it's so much exploitation and whatever. So like rather include these guys in the film. I thought that was pretty cool with the actual production of the film.
Yeah, and it adds and authenticity.
And I love their tracksuits. Oh, I yeah. love their tracksuits. The
oh,
blue
the
and teal and pink. Oh, I live for it. I live for the wardrobe in general. The coats. I want all the coats in that movie. All the coats.
I looked up the... Actually, I have the costume designer on here somewhere. So the costume designer... Where's he at? I said I had it. Now I can't find it. Great. Never mind.
It's okay. I actually... Yeah, we're digressing again. What were we talking... We were talking about wood, yeah.
Oh, no, the guy, Leonard Pollack, he had worked on Waxwork and Candyman 3 before. Hadn't done too many jobs, I guess, but he came from Waxwork as well.
Huh.
That's
there we
the
go.
Same crew. Backwork. The same crew together. Mm-hmm. I like it.
No, yeah.
But yeah, no, I love the authenticity. We did a Warriors episode about the Warriors, and they had to hire gangs to help them deal with the gangs on every street they shot on. So you have yeah. to make a deal with... these crews. And I mean, they said they found bullets and generators in other areas. I mean, you kind of have to, but that does, it looks great though, those overhead shots. So they use that neat technology. I found out that they, I don't know.
Skycam.
And it looks neat with the music playing. Like you're driving through this concrete, just sort of drab gray landscape. But I do think it makes Cabrini Green. They said it makes it look like a majesty, like a mesmerizing Gothic church or an ancient sinister pyramid. Because it really does stick out next to the skyscrapers over there. So it was so yeah. wise to use that overhead shot. And also with the red car driving, maybe that was a bit of a Shining take. He had the red.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just that overhead technology. I don't know. This movie had a pretty big budget, too. I think it was $9 million back in the day. So it's like 20-some million for this. That's pretty impressive for a horror film nowadays. If James Wan is making Insidious for $1 million, then... This is actually pretty good.
It's not bad at all.
No.
It's not bad at all. I know they were only shooting in Cabrini Green for like 3 days. Even Tony Todd was like, it was actually pretty creepy because they had to have like a lot of people go with them. And but it's interesting to read about Todd's experience in general. Like, he's like, yeah, a positive thing that came out of it was like he got to work with a lot of like, do a lot of gang interventions and stuff. Work with the guys, open a dialogue, do all that stuff. He also said in one interview that he's had clan members come up to him and tell him that they love how he kills people in the movie. I'm like, what the hell? So he's also like, he's just said like, it's been very interesting. He loves the love for Candyman, but it's also been a very weird, like, how could you expect something like that to happen after the fact, you know? Like, you don't know. You're just like doing this fun movie. He was just so stoked to do a movie with Bernard Rose. Like, yeah.
Wow. And so you said clan members came up to him and they said that they loved the way he killed?
Yeah, I'll go check out, I'll go look for the article and I'll send it to you. Like, but he said in one interview, like, he had clan members come up to him and be like, we love how you kill people in that movie. And he was just like, what? Which, yeah, I mean, I guess that's the reaction to that happening. But also wow. Back to, like, the architecture and stuff. So, yeah, the book, the movie is based on the What Book of Blood, Clive Barker short story. And that story actually begins with, let me quickly read it, like a flawless tragedy, the elegance of which structure is lost upon those suffering in it. The perfect geometry of the Spectre Street estate was only visible from the air. That's the first sentence of that story. And I just love that. I think it's such a beautiful sentence to open it with. And it really, if you read that, you're like, everything, you understand so much about how they filmed it, all the architectural shots, even that where the campus, where Helen and everyone is, the campus, like they kept on doing that shot. And I was like, yeah, okay, why? But then when you go read the short story, you can see, okay, that's where Rose got that from. And like, you start appreciating, like showing it from above, because we're within, like we can't see from above. Like we need to, like Google Maps, Street View stuff, like, mm-hmm. Which is interesting. Like, I just love how they did the cinematography in general. It's like a lot of cool angles in the movie. Not only the overhead stuff, a lot of cool angles.
There's an interesting quote. We did a Night of the Comet episode, and the director was like, you just need 3 wide shots to sell it. And I think they got a lot more than that, but they really sold it. Like, right? They kind of went out of their way to make it something different. Hey, I'm going to change the subject real quick, but I just found a quote from Bernard Rose where he said, I'm rather bored with happy endings. They reduce the sense of danger. It's like having the absolute feeling that however complicated or convoluted the problem any character may be going through in a movie, you feel so confident in most movies that at the end, there's going to be like a, like just everything's going to be solved. And so there's no suspense to the story anymore. But no, I think that's true. I mean, this is not a good ending for her. I mean, wait, are you supposed to cheer that that her ex gets killed? Like, what's, this isn't a happy ending. Is she with Candyman now?
Yeah, she's part of his, like, story for sure. But yeah, like, I really like the non-happy ending.
Have you seen that movie Vacancy where Luke Wilson gets stabbed about 18 times and 8 hours later he still wakes up? And you're like, oh, come on.
No.
Oh.
What?
We were in a theater and so we were watching Vacancy with Kate Beckinsale and Luke Wilson. And there's a scene where he gets stabbed and he's left for dead. He gets gutted. And Kate Beckinsale has to run around all night battling people. She comes back to him hours later and my buddy just goes, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then he goes, no, like, it takes you out.
Yeah, that's the worst.
And this
movie,
that's
the worst.
She's rescuing a baby, and then she gets burnt to like smithereens with her hair becomes completely burnt, and you're just like, it's such a And then you have strobe lights at the end.
You know what? Like, leave that stuff for like romantic comedies or like, you know, like stuff like that, but not like horror stuff. I don't like that in my horror. It's the same with Get Out. I like when I heard the alternative ending where, yeah, he went to jail. I was like, that checks out. That makes more sense. That would probably punch harder anyways. And like, cause I know, a lot of people want, I just want a happy ending. Life is so like horrible and whatever, but then go watch your romantic comedy. Like, horror is, like, deals with a lot of deep, real fears and stuff that, like, it's not the time to look away now. It's the time to look at the screen and, like, be real about it, kind of, you know? Mm-hmm. So I mean, I was all for, like, because I also saw that quote, that interview that Rose did where he said, no, screw the happy endings. And I was like, my man. Agreed.
Like, I love Drag Me to Hell because, spoiler, it's one of my favorite horror movies, but she gets dragged to hell. It's so literal.
There you go.
And the descent, like, you don't know how that ends. Like, these people are terrorized. There's not going to be a serial killer, like, I guess if there's a stalker movie, like a Halloween, you probably should have a final person, final girl, but...
Look, it works in some cases. Like, yeah. I'm thinking immediately, like, Hush from my Flanagan, you know? In some cases, that works because, like, that is the point of her story. Like, what needs to happen to get you out of it? You know, like, I mean, when the whole thing's a bloody metaphor for life or whatever, then sure, but... It doesn't always, like, work. And I think forcing it into horror is one of the worst things you can do. Sometimes it will work, but sometimes it won't. And I just think anyone that thinks Get Out ends with, oh, they're going to be fine.
How do you explain that to, like, the cops?
Are you delusional? Do you live in this world? In, like, you know?
Like, how do you explain that? I was watching The Shape of Water.
Exactly.
And I'm like, how are these two going to explain a dead, high-ranking military official and a disappeared woman who went into a thing with a sea monster? Like, they're going to be in trouble. You can't.
Exactly. And I mean, like, I'm sure I read this somewhere also, but because there's a lot of other people that were at that party that knows the guy that's going to come after him now because they don't want him to rat out on them. Because he only killed the Armitage family, not every single person that was at that bloody party. So,
wow. Hey,
guys fucked.
Yeah. That sequel. That's the
court case. It's not a happy ending, people.
A Few Good Men.
Sorry. Life's shit. Let's try and make it better. That's the bloody point.
Man, that would... Do you think the movie would have been that much of a blockbuster if it had such a... It probably wouldn't have, right? Because I think people left the theater smiling. You know what's interesting, too, about all those at the end? People were actively cheering when he was murdering all those people. And so I think people left on, like, a happy high. But that arrest would have crashed everybody. So I wonder if that would have prevented word of mouth or would have hurt the cinema score or audience score.
I do wonder about it, too, because, like... I mean, I think the way Jordan did, you know, like, because it is satire. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of, like, fun moments in there, too, really. But I don't know. Maybe. Oh, maybe. I mean, people apparently just need to have their little blankets around them and tell them, you're doing okay. You're doing okay.
Not Helen didn't do okay. I'll tell you what, though. She got everything taken from her in this.
A lot of people aren't doing okay. Those two boys aren't okay, you guys. But let's pretend they are. Yeah, no, and back to Candyman. No, I mean, I think with Helen, the book story actually also, like, explains it pretty cool because you're obviously in her head and whatever. And it's like that whole thing of, Do you want to live on in, like, a fame type of vibe? Or, like, should everyone just forget about you? And initially she was like, no, just, like, forget about me. I don't bloody care. But then she, like, changes her mind as she gets into the whole, like, well, basically when Candyman puts the bees into her because that's what he does. Like,
yeah.
Give us a kiss. Give us a stinger.
Worst ever.
So yeah, and she kind of transitions into that thing of, well, like, maybe also, like, the words you say about it's so much better to be like a whisper and not actually having to live. Because, I mean, that's actually a very sad thing because, like, what he's saying is living is so much suffering and pain. So it's better to be dead, but live in the minds of people. It's actually so bloody sad. Every time I watch the movie and hear the words, like, you know, it makes you think about, like, oh, Candyman, you tragic motherfucker. Because it is. It's horrible. His story. Did you know Tony Todd also made up his story? You probably do, because you also do a lot of research. But Tony Todd came up with all backstory for Candyman.
Oh, nice. I didn't hear about that. So I know the real backstory. Yeah. I didn't know what Tony Todd came up with.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, no, yeah, you know what Candyman is based on. But, like, the lure of, like, where he's, like, father was a slave, and he was brought up and the whole thing. Like, because that only comes in the second movie, right? It's not like...
Yeah, you see the flashback in the second film.
Yeah, but it's Professor Patel talks about it, like, briefly in the first. And Tony Todd came up with that.
Oh, really? Wow.
It's not in the book. It's not Bernard Rose. Tony Todd did.
Oh, I did not know that.
And that's why he's so, how do you say, he's so connected with the character. You should see him on Twitter and everything. He bloody loves freaking Candyman. Like, it's so his character, you know? I think that's also why, like, it's so good to know that he's going to be in the remake, because he be Candyman.
Jordan Peele said there wouldn't be, he doesn't think there'd be a Get Out without a Candyman, because it just changed the narrative. In 92, you had the first, like, one, like, I know in the past there had been, like, Blackula and stuff like that, but you had your first, one of the first, like, black monsters in this day and age people love Candyman. Candyman's alongside Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees. I mean, it's a whisper now that everybody uses, for sure. So he said without that and the inspiration of him, he might not be making horror movies. And that's sad, because it was 92. But it's still, I still love the way they handle this. Oh, but I guess,
yeah.
I mean, I guess I never really looked into that until I got older. But now people talking about how they still admire Demon Knight all these years later because of Jada Pinkett was the survivor in that. And then, I don't know, have you watched Horror Noir on Shudder?
We don't have Shudder.
Oh, sorry.
Shudder, come to South Africa, please.
But it's a neat documentary about just kind of like black cinema and horror. And the guy who directed it said his favorite horror movie that he went to was Event Horizon. There's just so few of them. It's sad. But I think that's another reason why Candyman's been so big, because he's one of the few that is just like that influence people. Does that make sense? It's such a unique movie, and I think that's why it's had such a good life.
Definitely. It's like I said earlier, for me, I wasn't big on horror, but I think just because not a lot of horror really did anything for me. Like, most of it was jump scares, but silly, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's and all of that. And, like, even Freddy. I mean, Freddy didn't really freak me out. Like, whatever, dude. You look funny.
I could take you.
Yeah, I could take you once. At least you haven't seen my dreams. So, you know.
And I think that's what I love about horror, too, is I think the genre is so... horror's been recycling itself forever. It really has. I mean, mm-hmm. You had Nosferatu, then you had Dracula. Like, it's been recycling itself for 100 years now. But I love the horror that's somewhat different. So we were talking about The Black Coat's Daughter.
Yeah.
We were talking about, I don't know, Drag Me to Hell. Like, I like it when there's something, Event Horizon, that was so new to me. Like, that's my favorite horror, is when they, I mean, obviously the tropes are in there, but when there's just something, some different faces or different, that's why I love the current crop of A24. I think you have all these new actors getting in, because these aren't big Hollywood blockbusters, so you see a lot more fresh faces. And it's just, yeah. I think that's when you really start to, I don't know, that's my favorite kind of horror right there. It's not the real meta stuff, not the real slashery stuff. I like it just when it gets to Candyman stuff, like the smart. I mean, the way this movie's lit. I mean, this is such a... They light it coldly, but then they light it very warmly. Every light is on a dimmer in this, and that was a choice they made. I think... A car going through, like, Candyman's mouth, which...
Yeah, oh... I love that shot where she climbs through Candyman's mouth the first time. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, and you see it. It's so beautiful. It's so beautifully done. Even today, like, you can see it's like the 90s or whatever, but it looks amazing.
I mean, there's a timelessness to it, because everything's in camera.
Exactly.
You're not showing some, you know, wonky 1992 CGI or some weird puppetry. There's really not even that in this, aside from the jump. That's the weirdest part. But
Most of the time you're in the movie. Most of the time you're really in it. Like, mm-hmm. Because, like, they want you to feel something. Bernard Rose all the, like, the actors, they're working so hard to try and make you feel something, feel these characters. And I think that's the kind of horror that we like more, is make me feel something more than just jump scare or whatever. More psychological, more empathy, more like those kind of things. Make me also feel something that I didn't know that I did. It's like, we actually had a discussion the other day, me and Corey, where we were talking about like religious horror, because neither of us are really into like religious horror movies. And it's interesting because a lot of people love that stuff, but it's really like kind of boring for me, because I just like, I don't buy into the gaslighting the religion does. I don't know. Like, it feels like it's just, oh, you must fear. And it's not, that doesn't really scare me. Like, you need to do something else with it, you know? Kind of like, did you see Penny Dreadful? I love Penny Dreadful.
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
The obviously the first series. I haven't seen the second one. But I hear it's a completely different story. Some people say it shouldn't actually have the Penny Dreadful title. So I'm very
It got cancelled, actually. It's only doing one season.
I saw that, and that's what I said. People were like, well, that's fine, because it's nothing like Penny Dreadful. And I was like, oh boy, okay. Like, still want to check it out just to know what the hell went wrong there. But anyway, like, I love the first series, and that also a lot of religious, like, you know, demons and God and whatever in it. But, oh, you gave me more with these people. It's so lonely, and these like existential themes. And then, oh, wait for it. It's also in like werewolves and vampires. And I mean, yes, that was maybe like a bit of a self-indulging like thing for people like me. That was great.
No, so I mean, yeah, you have Eva Green, Josh Hartnett. You have Eva Green, Josh Hartnett. He's been in a bunch of good horror movies too. I like Josh Hartnett in horror.
The cast, Timothy Dalton.
Yeah.
I live for the cast. I've got the box set because I am a huge fan. I've watched it like 3 times now. I actually think I'm ready for a fourth watch.
Do it. It's heavy though. There are some. It gets heavy. When the guy, the mirror guy, comes in, and then like there's some gnarly death in the, oh man.
Yeah, all the scenes between Eva Green and Frankenstein's monster.
Oh yeah.
I am a wreck, Mark. A wreck. It's so good. I cry. I hold myself. It's beautiful.
Oh, I forgot about Frankenstein.
But that's the thing, because it's so goth. It's like gothic romance. Like, it's tragic, but it's so beautiful, but it's so dark. great.
You should watch it. If y'all haven't watched Penny Dreadful, definitely do that. Oh man, they filmed in Ireland. That's tough though, to go from the overcast, the gothic version of Penny Dreadful to the bright sunshine, like Chinatown-esque Penny Dreadful City of Angels. That's a big departure. I wonder if people just couldn't. I wonder if it's actually a good show, just people didn't enjoy that. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I saw the trailer for the new Penny Dreadful, I already saw that, okay, this is not going to be anything like the first one. That was clear. So, like, maybe people just didn't watch the trailer, and then, but that's also, we've had this conversation before, Mark, like, people's expectations can really ruin a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Don't have too many expectations, you guys. Yeah. Try not to. Try your best. Like, be like neutral. Be like clear. Be open to everything.
Hey, so try. If people were, like, what should people's expectations be for Candyman? I mean, 92, this came out. People have, if they haven't watched it yet, what should they expect?
That's a good question. How would I tell someone that?
I guess I would say it's like, okay, it's, for me, it's like a horror noir drenched in sadness and like romance, but it's loaded with big blood effects.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely probably tell them that there will be some gore, not too much more blood than gore, but I mean, yeah, those two go hand in hand, really. But also, yeah, like, to maybe like look at it as a different story, something you've probably never seen before, because I think in a lot of ways that's true.
Yeah.
Like, we're like, so what does Candyman make you think of? Get Out. What other film does it make you think of? The actual story and the things that happen. What else?
Phantom of the Opera?
Yeah, like it's got a bit of a Dracula vibe.
Yep.
It's got a bit of like Hitchcockian shot stuff, or victim or wrongfully accused vibes. That's Hitchcock. Like it's got a lot of different, how do you say, like references, influences, but it's really something that I think stands but on its own. And I honestly, Mark.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about the new one. I am
oh,
so...
Oh, it's going to be so good.
I am... Oh, yeah.
They're saying that he like might be the kid. Someone... They're speculating it might be the kid that was pulled out of the fire.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, I mean, yeah, because I know that Vanessa Williams, who plays Anna Marie, the mother, she's in it. So, yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Right? Hey, so how about this? Before we get out of here, you want to do a Tony Todd draft?
Ah, a what?
A Tony Todd draft.
Jumping a draft on me. Yeah. Why? Okay, let me Google.
We have to.
Tony Todd. Okay, but like, can we do Tony Todd TV shows? Dude, this guy was in everything. He was in an X-Files episode. He was in MacGyver. He was in a Murder, She Wrote episode.
Movies only.
Fine.
And then you can go to Movies, Films, and Flicks Facebook to vote on this the day after this episode is released. All right, so I'll give you the first pick.
Okay, let me just like...
And you can pick Candyman.
No, I will not. I will pick the movie that when we all saw it the first time, we did that Leonardo DiCaprio meme from Once Upon a Time where he like points at the TV like, oh, which is Final Destination.
Oh.
Thank you very much. I'll take them before you do.
Levin Good and I did an entire series on Final Destination for the podcast, and I had a fun time going through it all.
Man, I love Final Destination. What? I love the franchise. Like, big fan.
So let's leave Candyman out. How's that sound? Or do you want it? I'm going to take The Crow. And then if you want Candyman, you can have it.
Yeah, no, we can take him out. It's fine. All right. I was like, well, we've got 2 and 3. I actually, by the way, watched 2 the other day. It wasn't great, but it wasn't as bad as I remembered.
I like that.
It kind of falls apart at the end, because at the end it really does kind of feel like white women save your thing. It's weird.
That they wanted to avoid in this. That they tried their best to avoid in this one.
Yeah, exactly. They tried their best, and then
This wasn't Matt Damon in Elysium, where he's like the one white dude on the planet who saves it all.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Matt Damon. Right. Okay, you said you were going with The Crow. Good one. Okay. I will go with Hatchets.
Oh, I love that.
I watched it the other day. Oh, it's so bad, but it's so fun.
They wanted, I think it's exactly the way they wanted, right? It's just a gnarly, violent, fun little thing.
Absolutely. I think so too. What was also cool is when I watched it, like it was with the Mardi Gras, and Candyman 2 starts with Mardi Gras, and I was like, yeah, it's only Todd with the Mardi Gras. Because he plays he's the Reverend Zombie in Hatchet.
Oh, yeah.
Reverend Zombie.
He likes going down there.
Yeah. All
right. You're gonna like this pick. My second pick is Night of the Living Dead, the remake.
Yeah. 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 Cool. I wanted to pick that one, but that's fine. Then I'll go for the obvious great one, which is Platoon.
Oh.
I'll do Platoon.
Evil. I'll take The Rock.
Okay, good one.
Platoon is so good.
So what like, ooh, now we're getting into the weird stuff. Let's go for Hellfest.
Hellfest?
I haven't even seen it, Mark.
Hellfest, I love this
2018.
Pick.
We're going to watch it.
Like a boxer who sold his soul to become a great boxer. What do you think?
Oh gosh, it's like, yeah.
Well,
it starts with on Halloween night. I'm thinking, yeah, let's do it. All right,
so that's fun. See, that's a fun one. Now I'm going through his 10 billion movies trying to pick one.
I know.
Gee, all right, so you already got Final Destination. Let's see. I'm not going to cheat and take another one. Even though I love Final Destination 5. I don't know if he's in that one, actually. He's in Hatchet 2. He is in Final Destination 5. I'm not taking it.
You can if you want it. It's fine.
All right. Because I love Final Destination 5. I'm doing that.
I love have most of them. I think, was it, I think three or four that wasn't that great.
Yeah, four is a 3D one.
That wasn't well, can I take another Final Destination?
Yes, you can. What are you going to take?
Final Destination 2.
Oh, making log trucks.
I love that one.
Scary for everybody.
That's a good one.
When you see logging trucks now, do they not just scare you?
I mean, look, it wrecked it for all of us, but actually not a bad thing to look out for on the road. So
actually,
thanks.
Yeah. Final actually, it raised awareness.
Exactly. Look out. Keep a good distance. Get ready to swerve.
You picked a cheeky one, so I got to pick a cheeky. I want to pick a cheeky one, too.
Go for it.
Oh, I'm going to do The Debt Collector with Scott Adkins. I'm doing that.
I didn't even see it on the list.
Scott Adkins is great. He's like the most underappreciated action star on the planet. So I'm taking The Debt Collector. He plays a gangster in it. He's not in it much.
Yeah, I don't know that. Like, I don't know any of these freaking movies. But that's what I love. Like, Tony Todd. He's such a, like, he's known for being a B actor. He just likes doing whatever. He doesn't care. Don't tell him what to do. He just does what he wants.
And I'd just love to have him on set. You know he's got to be a consummate pro. You don't have to give him much direction. He just takes care of business.
Yeah, I think he just loves being there, man. Like, he really loves acting. He loves doing what he does. You can see it when you read his stuff and his interviews. And what is this? This has, oh my. So apparently he's in Frankenstein 2015. He plays Eddie. And this movie has 100% Rotten Tomatoes score. So I'm going with Frankenstein 2015.
Oh, wow. Eddie. Oh, wait.
Why didn't I?
Bernard Rose. Wow. Bernard Rose directed this.
Okay.
All right.
Dude, no ways. Look at that. Okay, this is spooky.
You got that. There it is. Frankenstein.
Look at that.
All right, I'm going to take I got one more, and then we'll get out of here. Let's see. Hey, Danny Houston's in it. I like him. What?
Yeah.
Army of the Damned? I think that's a zombie movie. Sushi Girl?
I saw the title, and I really liked Sushi Girl. I was like, should I go for titles?
Jack the Reaper.
Did you see the Candy Corn? That was last year, Candy Corn.
Candy Corn? Is that a... I'm going to do Minotaur. I don't even know what it is, but I'm taking it. All right, there
Minotaur.
It is. Along ago in the Iron Age. Tom Hardy? Tom Hardy's in Minotaur. Yeah, that's Tom... Is that... No. That's Tom Hardy. Rucker Hauer? What is it?
Dude, I'm Googling Sushi Girl. Okay, let's stop.
All right, cool. I'll take Minotaur, and then we'll... Alright, we're just going down to
Candy
Tony
Corn is a cool... We're not... Did you see the candy...
What is Candy Corn? Here, let me pull it up.
The poster looks pretty cool. I like the poster.
So,
60%.
I know we're just talking about Tony Todd movies here, but you gotta support Tony Todd. So, this will raise awareness. Sky Sharks? He's in a movie called Sky Sharks.
What? Tony Todd in a shark movie? Sharks in the Sky? Is this what we're talking? Are we talking Sharks in the Sky?
Sky Shark.
Like, is this before Sharknado? Did you do the first Sharknado thing?
No, I think this is a Nazis on robotic sharks planes. Yeah, I think it is. Here, wait, let me...
Wow.
Sky Sharks. Major General Frost. Deep in the ice of the Antarctic, a team of geologists uncover an old Nazi laboratory still intact where dark experiments had occurred. The Nazis created... Oh, wow. The Nazis modified sharks who are able to fly and whose riders are genetically mutated undead superhumans. A military task force called Dead Flesh 4 reanimated U.S. soldiers who fell in Vietnam is put together to prevent world downfall. Wow.
Okay, so do you see the poster? So I feel like when we were promoting this pod episode, we should definitely like use this poster and then be like, yeah, Candyman, you know, starring Tony Todd, better known for his role in Sky Sharks.
I'll do it. Why not? Look at this cast.
Look at the tagline. The sea is not enough.
Oh.
The sea is not enough.
You want to sing the theme song for that? All right, so any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Do I? Sorry, I'm still at Sky Sharks. No, I think we actually covered a bit. Oh, this is a fun fact. I'm just like scrolling through notes and stuff. So I just read when I was doing the research, Clive Barker designed like 150 art pieces for the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, that series that was on Netflix. I thought that was pretty cool because Clive Barker is an artist as well, for those who do not know.
And he also helped out in Event Horizon. He helped do a lot of the pre-pro on that.
Yes, so cool. I thought that was pretty cool. And so I'm just scrolling. Oh, we never actually talked about, like, yeah, the articles that we're pretty sure is based on, but we don't actually need to, because that's actually a downer. You can go read up on the real story behind Candyman, because there is a story that it's pretty compelling. It's like, there's definitely John Malkovich, who spoke with the writer who wrote that article, the journalist.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
John definitely, because John, I mean, went on to work with Propaganda, Polygram Fools. He did Portrait of a Lady adaptation, being John Malkovich. It's the same film companies that did Candyman. So he definitely spoke to the producers. And I mean, it's not like, obviously, like Rose and them, they put their own stuff, like the urban legend stuff, and obviously a lot of Clive Barker's The Forbidden short story. A lot of that's into Candyman also, but yeah, if you read on the story that happened, then you'll be like, yeah, that's even the name. It's also a roofie.
Yeah, he wanted to make the cop white, right, in the movie, and they're like, well, that's probably not the best idea to have.
Yeah,
that.
Malkovich said, yeah, he wanted to, like, talking about the conversation with John Malkovich.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was like, he wanted, like, white people. He didn't see, like, black people. Like, yeah, it was actually pretty embarrassing what he said. Like, yeah. Yeah, like, Bernard was like, nah.
The good old early 90s, huh?
Oh, no, it wasn't Bernard, the writer. Yeah, the good old 90s, nah. Wow, where are we now? Sorry, is this not the 90s anymore? Mark, what are you telling me?
Actually,
what are you telling? How long has this freaking COVID been going on? Holy crap.
Yeah. These 4 months, 5 months, they felt like a very long time.
I'm telling you. But yeah, no. All in all, like, I'm very happy Tony Todd did Candyman and not Eddie Murphy. I love Eddie Murphy, but yeah, like, I think that was a bit of choice. And if you haven't seen it, go watch it. If you've seen Candyman, watch it again, because I do think it's one of those movies where every time you see it, like, you know, something else will catch your eye. You might feel something different, but yeah. Oh, I actually wrote puns. I didn't use any of my puns.
Let's hear them. speed puns real quick before we get out of here.
I'll just give you the best one. A great story just needs a good hook.
Oh.
Thank you, everyone. Oh. Been a good night. Keep well.
That was perfect. And then also, when we were putting together a basketball team, Norbert and I picked Candyman as my shooting, like, power forward, because he has a good hook shot.
Oh yeah, nice. Love it.
So bad.
Love it. I'll vote just for that.
Well, thank you for joining, and thank you for, like, getting me refamiliarized with this movie and covering on the podcast. I had a lot of fun covering this.
Thanks for having me, Mark. It's always fun. And yeah, I just love that, like, you allow us to talk about the movies that we love and enjoy and get to share with other people. And it's great. Thank you so much.
It makes my job easier when people get to talk about movies they love, they bring so much information and love of it. It makes my job so much easier. I love it. So
yeah, no, it's great. It's fun.
Where can people find you? You want to promote anything?
I'm writing stuff, like, different places over the internet, but yeah, I just say go check me out on Twitter at Sanandi. We'll, like, put it at the bottom when the pod gets released. You'll put it at the bottom.
Oh yeah, I'll do
right?
that. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, just check out Sanandi on Twitter, and because in my bio, like, you'll see where you can currently find stuff, like, that I write, crack.com, places like that. So yeah. That's, I think, the safest for now, because, you know, the internet, I don't even know where I'll be running in 2 months' time. So just check me out on Twitter.
All right, sounds good. Well, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Mark.
So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Zanandi Botes, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.